Welcome. I often have that feeling at the beginning of a session, like packing all the provisions on a ship for a long journey. The Tenzo went shopping for a week's worth of provisions, and they're all stored away. We checked out the ship. There's no major leaks. The weather forecast is, well, we can't really do anything about that. The trip's already scheduled. We might have some storms and maybe some sunny, breezy days. And we just left the dock. And there's no turning back. And I already feel a little bit homesick. Can we turn back? Maybe it's not too late. Let's cancel the session and go back home. Because this ocean is big and there's no land in sight. They have that term in the sailing world, finding your sea legs, because the boat's kind of moving around all the time and you feel queasy for a day or two. And then you find your sea legs. It's like here. You can be rocking around a lot, but you don't feel seasick. Find a balance on this ship. It's so tempting though to look back at the dock and think, maybe we could have just fixed up the ship for another few weeks before setting sail. But we have this vow. We vow with all beings, even though they might not realize they have the vow. They do. I would say. Therefore, we enact it for them if they don't realize it. We vow with all beings from this life on, throughout countless lives, from this period of Zazen on, throughout countless periods. As the Shuso said last night, it's not recommended to count the periods on the first morning of Sesshin, the periods ahead of us. From this period on throughout countless periods, from this moment on throughout countless moments, we vow to hear the true Dharma. The true Dharma that is not what it sounds like. We vow to hear the Dharma that can't be heard the way we think we hear it. We vow to taste the true Dharma. That's not what we think it is. And that upon hearing it, no doubt will arise in us. Or if doubt arises, it just evaporates like a snowflake landing on the hot fire of the true Dharma. Snowflake after snowflake of doubt raining down on this massive fire. But if we hear the partially true Dharma, it's just like it's a slightly warm plate. So the snowflakes maybe build up a little bit before they melt. But we vow to hear the true Dharma, and hearing it, no doubt, will last for more than a moment. Nor will we lack in faith and trust this way. And that upon meeting the true Dharma, we will let go of wanting to go back to the dock. Maybe even okay to want to go back to the dock sometimes, but we vow to continue the voyage we set out on. Renounce worldly affairs. Our usual everyday life where we're just caught up in the routine. So easy to get lost in the routine. And that in this letting go of the usual, habitual, routine mind, the great earth and all living beings together will realize the great awakened way. So this vow is already here in our hearts, or we wouldn't have ended up on such a ship. But sometimes it's hard to find it at the beginning of Sesshin, in the middle of Sesshin, at the end of Sesshin. It's easily lost. As Dogen says, there are these various things that rarely come to full maturity. Certain types of fish eggs, certain types of mangoes, and bodhicitta. A little hot plate starts getting like covered with snow, and pretty soon it starts to freeze over. Whereas our warm vow in the meeting of this sentient being with true, clear nature of mind, bodhicitta rises. And this great vehicle aspiration is not simply for our own peace of mind. But it's the awesome, vast aspiration to moment to moment let go of ourself for the benefit of all beings. Sometimes it's said, if we don't have that vaster scope of vow for all beings, then we won't have enough warmth to melt these snowflakes. If it's just for ourselves alone, actually maybe more difficult to sustain such a practice, to stay on this ship for 7 days. But if we remember the suffering of this world, may be possible to continue. Our Indian ancestor Vasubandhu has a treatise on the Sutra of Arousing Bodhicitta. We've just been studying Dogen's Hotsu Bodai Shin, Arousing the Bodhi Mind. So this treatise of Vasubandhu is called Hotsu Bodai Shin Kyo Ron, or the Hotsu Bodai Shin Sutra Commentary. We don't know about this Hotsu Bodai Shin Sutra. It's lost in the mists of time, but the Vasubandhu knew about it, apparently. Encouraging us in this great intention. Vasubandhu says, the Tathagata stated that the karmic blessings resulting from even the lowliest and most feeble, single, beginner's mind thought of awakening are such that they could not be completely described even in 100,000,000,000 kalpas. So, the beginner's lowliest, most feeble moment of, I don't know about this, giving my life to letting go of self-centeredness for the benefit of all beings forever and ever, from this life on throughout countless lives. I don't know about that, but maybe, what about that? For just this moment. Just this moment. No, it's too much, forget it. But even that feeble, single moment thought is more amazing, and the blessings resulting from this, the results that benefit the world, can't be described in myriads of kalpas. How much less could the resultant karmic blessings be described where one has coursed in such thoughts of resolve for a whole day, a month, a year, or even 100 years? Why is this the case? Whatsoever is practiced by a bodhisattva is endless. A bodhisattva wishes to cause all beings to abide in unproduced dharmas of great patience, or great patience with the unproduced, deep acceptance that nothing is truly happening the way it appears. And the Bodhisattva wishes to enable all beings to abide in this great patience with the non-production of anything and realize complete perfect awakening. When the Bodhisattva first brings forth this resolve for awakening, it's like when the great sea first gradually begins to rise into existence. The first drops of water that make the ocean. One must realize that this ocean then becomes the abiding place for all the nyoi, wish-fulfilling jewels that grow inside oysters at the bottom of this huge ocean. But these wish-fulfilling jewels inside the oysters at the bottom of the ocean, they're not yet fully mature when the first drops are filling the ocean. But that's how we need this giant ocean to make these oysters, to make these pearls. But each drop makes the ocean. And when the Bodhisattva generates this resolve, this intention, this aspiration, it is kindness and compassion which are taken as foremost. The Bodhisattva's kindness is boundless and immeasurable. Therefore, this generation of the resolve is itself free of any boundaries and is equal in its vastness to the expansiveness of all the realms inhabited by beings. It's like empty space. There's nothing not embraced by this resolve. There's no beings not embraced by it. So it's not just to help out each other in this room. Of course, we start here. But keeping the vast realms of sentient beings in mind and heart as we practice moment to moment, letting go. We hear them walk by outside, comparing the digital resolution of their cell phones on their camera, cell phone cameras. We wish them to not believe what they think about which camera cell phone camera is best to take a picture of the Zen Center, which they seem to be discussing for a while in front of the Zen Center. We radiate our intention to them. May they be included in our sesshin. Just suppose for a minute, Vasubandhu says, that there was a person who split a single hair into 100 filaments. We can try this during work period with a very sharp knife, splitting a hair into 100 filaments, and then by dipping one of the 100 filaments of one hair into the water, drew forth a droplet of the great ocean's waters. So the all the beings that we that we can see in around the world, all the living beings struggling to find their way in this life are comparable to this drop compared to actually truly all the living beings throughout the universe, like the great ocean itself. Beings are so numerous that even if all the Buddhas discoursed on this matter for an incalculable and boundless number of kalpas, they would still not be able to include all these beings. I think there's a lot of sentient beings in this universe, and part of being a sentient being is holding the illusory sense that we're separate from the rest of the universe, and therefore just from that very thought we suffer, and then we cause incalculable amounts of suffering to the other already suffering beings. It's a difficult situation to live in this world and try not to harm, to try to protect, to try to love all these sentient beings. And when the Bodhisattva generates this bodhicitta, it's able to completely extend to all these beings. O children of Buddha, how then could one be able to reach the end of this bodhicitta's vastness? If there are bodhisattvas who hear this description about dividing hairs into filaments and how the portion of sentient beings that we can imagine are just like this drop on the tip of a hair filament compared to the great ocean of beings, the bodhisattvas hear this description and are not frightened by it, are not struck with terror by it, and are not caused to retreat and sink away by it, then one should realize that these bodhisattvas are definitely able to generate bodhicitta. Are you frightened by the descriptions? I'm a little bit frightened. To really let the pain and confusion and distress of boundless numbers of sentient beings like sink into my heart in this like a limitless way where there doesn't seem to be any end to it. It's how can our heart be that open? It's frightening to for me as a separate being to imagine opening that wide. There's one for whom this is not fearful. Already living here now, moving out and in through the portals of our face. There's one who's just ready and open, even if I'm not, even if you're not. This one is right here. This one is not looking back at the shore, wishing we could have a little more time in the yacht club swimming pool before we left the dock. And now we're in the big ocean where there's big fish, where there's wish-fulfilling jewels growing inside oysters. And sometimes in big storms, the oysters even start flapping. Flapping right out of the water and ringing down on the deck of the ship. I don't know if I'm up for that kind of thing. But I want to be. I just read something from Kolben, our founder, in a Sesshin talk. He said something like, the greatest thing for me, the most exciting thing, is to have an experience that's completely new. Something like that. Talking about Sesshin. The most exciting thing is to experience a completely new moment. And isn't every moment that way? But so hard to experience them like this. I mean, it might be kind of easy if these oysters started crashing through the Zendo skylights, clattering on the floor, and breaking open with their radiant, wish-fulfilling pearls, starting to then roll all over the Zendo floor like laughing marbles of bliss. Then maybe kind of easy to experience the freshness of the moment. But just like another period of a sore knee, today is Suzuki Roshi's memorial. We celebrated this morning. And as you may have heard, he said, people say that practicing Zen is difficult. Did you ever hear anyone say that? But there is a misunderstanding as to why. It's not difficult because it's hard to sit in the cross-legged position or to attain enlightenment. That's not difficult. It's difficult because it's hard to keep our mind pure and our practice pure in its fundamental sense. In Japan, we have this phrase, beginner's mind. The goal of practice is always to keep our beginner's mind. Suppose you recite the Prajna Paramita Sutra only once. Suppose you say its title like that only once. It might be very good recitation of the title. Prajna Paramita Sutra. Already it's boring. Shit. Once was kind of fresh, but it's too late. What would happen to you if you recited it twice, three times, four times, or more? You might easily lose your original attitude towards it. The same thing will happen in your other Zen practices. For a while, you'll keep your beginner's mind, but if you continue to practice 1, 2, 3 years or more, although you might improve some, you're liable to lose the limitless meaning of original mind. So if you've been practicing for longer than 3 years, then you really have difficulty. For Zen students, the most important thing is not to be dualistic. Our original mind includes everything within itself, always rich and sufficient within itself. Just please don't lose your self-sufficient state of mind. This is not a closed mind, but an empty and ready mind. Ready for anything, open to everything. In the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. In the expert's mind, there are few. In bodhicitta, many possibilities. And unsurpassed, complete, perfect enlightenment, maybe few possibilities compared to the initial resolve for this perfect awakening. What time is it?
Forgot your watch.
Yeah.
Fresh moment.
A fresh moment. Just like this. Well, Vasubandhu does mention there's various conditions that when they're in place, then bodhicitta seems to like come into focus. So even though we might say it's inconceivable, sometimes ancestors like Vasubandhu like to enumerate conditions. That may be helpful to get a sense of this bodhicitta. So he says, bodhicitta can arise when drawing close to spiritual friends, to kalyana mitra, to kind friends who encourage our practice. Therefore, we do this practice together with others to help encourage our bodhicitta. Bodhicitta arises sometimes from the condition of making offerings to Buddhas, when wholeheartedly giving ourself to the awakened mind, making offerings to Buddhas. In that openness, bodhicitta arises. Sometimes it arises dependent on accumulating roots of goodness, or we might say anything just when we drop our self-centeredness for a moment and just do something fresh for the benefit of others. In the old days, and sometimes present days, they call that the result of that merit, which is not something, but it's just the joy. I say, it's just the joy of doing something good in this world. And that joy is a condition for bodhicitta. Sometimes it's just making the resolve to realize supreme truth is a condition. Another condition is maintaining the pliant and harmonious mind. You may recall Dogen says, in talking with his teacher, Rujing said, you should have this kind of soft mind, Nyujin, pliant, flexible mind and heart. And Dogen says, well, how do you realize this soft, pliant, flexible mind? Rujing says, well, dropping off body and mind, of course. patience with suffering is a condition for bodhicitta. Having pure kindness and compassion for all beings is a condition for bodhicitta. Maintaining a deep mind dedicated to seeing everyone with equal regard or impartiality towards all beings is a condition for bodhicitta. Having trust and joy in the great vehicle of bodhisattvas, the vast, inconceivable scope of total openness to all is a condition for bodhicitta. And wanting to realize Buddha's wisdom is another. Those are 10 conditions. When they're lined up, bodhicitta starts to enter this body and mind. And I think a big one is that Vasubandhu doesn't mention right there, but just remembering the suffering of this world, including our own. Our own suffering will be revealed to us on this voyage, and of course that we can just kind of like wallow around in it and gulp a lot of salt water and just try to hold on for our life until the ship gets back to the dock. Sometimes the scene is like that, I think, yeah. Or we can say, no, we know it's not returning for 7 days, so rather than just gulping the salt water, we can sit upright again. And open to our own suffering, really watching how it works, watching how what gives rise to discontent. Slightest little thing in the middle of a calm day of sailing, a little twist of fate, and this is not okay, the mind says. How can it be okay? And then if we can be okay with, somewhat okay with our own difficulties, and we open more and more, others need us to be clear and free and watch what we're doing moment to moment. Sometimes it's said there's the aspiration bodhicitta, which is just giving rise to the awakened mind, which is just we vow with all beings from this life on throughout countless lives to hear the true Dharma. Aspiration bodhicitta, and then there's the application bodhicitta. That okay, I'm resolved for this moment. Now apply, the practice, put it into effect. And the application bodhicitta in the great vehicle is usually described as these 6 bodhisattva practices. Boundless giving, boundless harmless conduct towards others, boundless patience, boundless diligence, boundless presence, boundless openness. So, six paramitas of bodhisattvas. We have six more days of sesshin, so we maybe have a chance to explore those particular oyster pearls. In the meantime, anything you'd like to bring up? Today is, doesn't seem, look like a storm. It actually looks like pretty clear weather, like just a mild breeze coming from the west. And you can trim the sails and have all the sails up today. And just enjoy the ride and out closer and closer to the middle of this ocean. Dedicate any joy that may have arisen any time throughout our life up to this point, and any time in our life from this point on. We don't need any extra joy. We have unlimited amounts, so we just give away whatever arises now to all beings more numerous than can be imagined. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow to be coming.